Hi there, Rhianna Patrick here, and I'm thrilled to welcome you to this OzYA Extra with Words in Deep Blue author Kath Crowley. Kath discusses the inspiration behind her novel, her career in literature, and her love of libraries. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to like us at facebook.com/abcre or subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or at abc.net.au/abcre.
OzYA with Sarah Mair Cox and Jean Wong.
It's a love story set in a secondhand bookstore. It's about a girl who comes to work there after she has lost her brother, Cal, who's drowned. And so she returns back to this bookstore where a boy that she, her best friend, and the boy that she likes is working. And she goes there to try and forget about Cal. So she moves away from the beach where he's drowned to go to the city. So it's a love story set in a bookstore. And it's about how we leave ourselves on the things we love, I think.
Kath, your novel, as you've mentioned, is a lot about love. It's also a lot about death and also a bit about grief. What did you realise about grief while writing this novel?
Well, initially when I started to write Rachel, who's the girl who comes to work at the bookstore, she was mourning her brother. And although I have lost people before, I haven't felt that really intense grief. And so I was a bit worried that I wasn't getting her grief right, that somehow there was one grief that kind of fits everyone or describes everyone. So she was a little bit hard to write, and I've told the story that my father passed away while I was writing the book, and he helped me a lot with the book. He loves secondhand books. I'm still finding cards for him and letters that he's kept in his books. My mum's been passing them along to me. But after he passed away, I had to put the book aside for a while, because I couldn't write, you know, while I was feeling that way. But it made me feel as though, well, grief is very particular to the person. And so it enabled me to write about that character, perhaps with a little bit more insight, I think.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, Kath, about whether writing that character of Rachel, did that help you with your own grief of losing your dad?
It helped me a little bit, but I think time is the thing that really helps, and also eventually realizing that he has left himself behind in lots of ways for me, the way people do. And that's what Rachel comes to realize about Cal, that although he's not here anymore and she's grappling with that and trying to work out, well, where is he, but she finds evidence of him kind of left in his own love story, in the things he's written in books. And I mean, ultimately they're the only things we have. That's what we have to come to terms with. So although it didn't necessarily help, but it did give me an insight, I think.
Now, Kath, your main characters, Henry and Rachel, have a history. How did you get the balance right between Rachel's unrequited love for Henry, but also her going through her grieving process of losing her brother, Cal, because that's all sort of happening at the same time, of, I suppose, that feeling of rejection from Henry, who she's written a letter to but hasn't got a response, but also him not knowing that her brother has passed away?
Yeah, that was really difficult, because she had to be sad at the same time as she was coming back to life. I mean, part of that I dealt with by having it, giving her space. So she'd already had a year of grieving. So she was kind of on the cusp of that. I mean, of course, grief lasts longer than a year, but that rawness was over for her. And I think as a character, she came back to the bookstore knowing that Henry would bring, he was the only one who was going to kind of bring her out of that and make her laugh again. So there was that there. But also, I mean, you know, I think while you're grieving, there are light moments and you do laugh with your friends. You'd go crazy if there weren't those breaks in it. So it doesn't hit you constantly. And so there was that. And also at the end of my grief at that 1 year point, that was when I met my husband. So I think it is absolutely possible that love brings you out of it, brings you out of sadness. I mean, that's what life does. Like in the book, there's a little line that just says that, you know, death is the little scheme at the end, you know, life is the big scheme. And I think that's it. Like eventually you hold on to life and you come back to life.
Is that what you wanted to include in there too? Was that unexpected, the unexpectedness of life that takes you when you least expect it somewhere else?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and love and friendship and kindness and compassion and someone else's insight. I mean, all these things bring you back.
Is it also one of those things where because Henry has known her for so long too, that he has that ability to sometimes read between the lines as you do when you have people who are close to you, who know you better than you know yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that idea that she comes back to someone who knows her so well that she doesn't even have to speak. And often he's just looking at her and reading her body language. And I think he knows on some level before she tells him that there's something incredibly wrong with her because she's come back so physically changed and changed in her manner. And a lot of my books are about that friendship, that intimacy we have with friends, you know, also the, you know, romantic relationships. But I think that the love story that goes on just between two friends who know each other so well and care for each other so much that they can, you know, kind of intuit things.
Howling Bookshop is another character that is in this book. If you had a bookstore, Kath, what would you have in it if you could have anything? What is your ideal bookshop and what does that look like?
Do you know, I think it looks like Howling Books. It's secondhand. It's got that. I saw the other day, like in the middle of Howling Books, there's a long fiction couch that's this deep blue velvet. And I actually saw one the other day and I thought, that's what's in the middle of Howling Books. And it's a mix of bookstores that I visited around the city and in the country. But whatever it looks like, it's got that feel about it of people who absolutely love fiction and non-fiction, love words and talk about it. I mean, you go into the Sun Bookshop, it's not a secondhand bookstore, but you go into the Sun Bookshop in Yarraville and the people who work there adore books. They know all about them. And, you know, that's the same for bookstores across Melbourne. But I love that feeling of people who just, they're in there not just for the money, but because they absolutely love the product or the thing that they're selling.
Kath, what do you love about physical books in general? Because this story is very much about the love of the physical book and what you can do to a physical book by leaving comments, circling things that you love, highlighting passages that are in there. But what is it for you that you love about physical books?
I mean, I loved opening up my dad's books, and whether he had written on them or not, he was on those pages, he had thought things, he had held that book. So I love the fact that we can kind of, well, we can pass on our history seen and unseen through them. I do love opening them and finding things inside them. So I love that they're a point of connection between people, a physical point of connection. I mean, I love ebooks as well. I mean, I just love the written word, but I love the book that I can hold in my hands, because it's got history on it. It's covered in, you know, some of them are covered in dust. You can actually smell them. A woman in Alice's bookstore in Rathdown Street, bookshop in Rathdown Street, said to me, "There's an archaeology of the soul in a secondhand bookstore." And I think that's a really lovely line.
When your friend organised that birthday surprise where you had to go and find clues in books, we just don't see enough of that anymore, I don't think. It's rare that you see a treasure hunt or you see a scavenger hunt. And there's something, even though it's quite simple, there's so much joy that you can get out of that, isn't there?
There is. And it was a way of finding myself again. I mean, she sent me off to places, you know, I had to go. Some of the things were that I had to go to places I loved. I had to go to new places. I had to go to the library to find things, which was lovely. She sent me a sandwich bag, like a snaplock sandwich bag full of Pablo Neruda's poetry, all cut up. So that idea that you had to make something new out of something old. And so I hadn't read his poetry for such a long time, but in pulling out all of those beautiful lines, I went back and reread, you know, his work and made my own poetry from that. So it was an incredibly beautiful thing to do for someone and to take that thing that you know that they love, and for me that's words, and kind of re-gift it for them. I think that's an absolutely beautiful thing to do.
And someone who obviously knows you very well to know that you'd be able to pick whose poetry that was.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I mean, it's hard to miss. You know, with Google these days, you can put it in. But I knew as soon as I read the lines. Absolutely.
Kath, what kinds of books do you like to read when you're not writing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I like to read books that will challenge me, that show me the possibilities. So I don't mind so much I don't think any book fails, but I like books that take a bit of a risk with the narrator and with the style. Just books that show me that I could be a better writer. Lately, when I stopped writing, I read Emily Gale's The Other Side of Summer, which I absolutely love. The writing is exquisite. I've just finished reading Hannah Kent's The Good People, which I absolutely loved. Before that, I read Miss Jane. Before that, I reread Cloud Wish by Fiona Wood, which I absolutely loved. I like to just read anything I can get my hands on when I'm not writing, because I think, God, this is brilliant and I can improve and this can be done. Like, I like writing that kind of suggests to me the possibilities of language.
And how often do you think about your entire family telling you that it was okay to give up your full-time job and head towards a career in writing?
I mean, I do have a great family in that sense. They were really supportive. Not one of them said, I mean, they didn't all unanimously say, this is the right thing for you to do, but none of them said, you're crazy or it will never happen or that's a stupid thing to do. Yeah, and even now, I mean, now they're so supportive, and it's not easy being a writer. I mean, you know, you're never quite sure where your wage is coming in. So financially it's not easy. And, you know, my mum still tells me that it's absolutely the right thing to do, even when I feel like it might not be. So I feel very lucky.
Kath, now that you're a few books in, what is your advice, I suppose, to emerging writers? I mean, just on that it isn't an easy road to travel being a writer, but that it's also not easy reading feedback about your book left on whether it's blogs or, you know, on websites of what people think. How much do you take that on, and how little, you know, in the time that you've been doing this that you've learnt that really sometimes you just have to block that out?
I mean, everyone's got a right to think what they want to about books and to express that. But I try not to read that, because that would take away some of the joy of writing, and it would also mean that I was less likely to take a risk next time, and that means that I can't get better. You can't get better if you are so afraid of failing that you don't try. Having said that, I absolutely take on the advice of my editors and the people that I trust and admire. So I've got an amazing editor, Catherine Drayton, Claire Craig at Pan Macmillan is a wonderful editor, Alison Walsh at Knopf. And when they talk to me about my work and give me ways in which I can improve, I take that on board. So I love to be edited, and I'm really happy. I love getting getting constructive criticism, and the harsher the better. I want to get better, but I don't think it's helpful to read lots and lots of commentary on your work from blogs and social media. Well, for me anyway, I think that can be quite crippling.
And Kath, finally, I mean, what do you hope readers take away from Words in Deep Blue?
I've had a couple of lovely emails from people who've read it, and it's reconnected them with books. A lovely email from one of my past English teachers who I just adored as a teacher, who said that she kind of, through reading it, it had made her reassess what was important in future. And I think that's an amazing comment to have been given. So ideally, I would love people just to enjoy it as a great story. But if they then thought about secondhand books and the importance of books and the importance of words and the importance of the book industry and the importance of the Australian book industry in particular, if that happened, that would be fantastic.